Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to welcome you to a special episode of Boston's Best today. We are turning the tables and interviewing Mark Condon to talk about his latest product, iPuppy. You all know Mark is obviously the host of a wildly successful podcast, a brilliant financial planner, former titan of the chip industry, but today we're going to talk about his brand new business venture. I'm Jonathan Krieger. I'm going to be your host for today's event. You can obviously find my episode on Mark Condon's show by digging into the archives. But today we're excited to interview Mark. Here we go. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Things are excellent, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
I just want to make the record clear. This was Jonathan's idea, and I think it's a fantastic idea. I hadn't even crossed my mind to do this, so I'm pretty stoked to get into iPuppy today.
Yeah, I said, Mark, you've got a lot of fans who are dying to know what's happening behind the scenes. Who are you? I think a lot of times you hear these shows and you hear the interviewer and, you know, you kind of become interested in like, what's their story and who are they? And I know obviously episode 100, you talked a lot about yourself and your background, but you've now since then kind of launched this whole new business venture. And I thought it'd be kind of cool to take people behind the scenes and see the project you're working on. So thanks for peeling back the curtain, as they say.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm excited to get into it.
We're going to start off a bit heavy. Mark, tell me about Champ, your dog.
Oh, man, you are going heavy. Champ was my boy of 14 years. I got Champ. He was a chocolate lab. I got him when he was 9 weeks old. He gave me 14 years and 3 days of an amazing life. Champ was the man. He's everything a dog, they tell you about a dog. Man's best friend. He was awesome. Like, even if you didn't know him, you fell in love with him instantly. He was always happy. He never barked. He never bit. He was just the life of the party everywhere he went. And like, even my wife, like, she didn't grow up with dogs, and they became best friends shortly after meeting each other. She just never imagined having a dog. And then she spent five or six years with him around, and it was cute seeing them like cuddling up on the couch or in the bed together. Like, it was cute. So Champ was just he was the best, man. Like, if anyone has a dog, especially if you've had a dog for that long, like, you just, you know, there's a bond you can't replace. I've been very fortunate in my life in a lot of ways, and Champ was a huge benefactor of my life. The losing him was like, that was the hardest thing to this date that I've ever had to go through. It's hard because as a dog, you can't talk to them about what's happening. You can't talk to them. They can't really understand, you know, they're getting weaker. And it's hard to communicate, you know, verbally with them. So it's a very difficult thing to go through. I'm sure anybody that's had a pet or a dog in general that have gone through that understands and can relate. But Champ was, he was awesome, man. Everyone keeps asking me if you would get another dog. And I think eventually people were asking me like a month into it. And I was like, I feel like I'd be like,
whoa, easy there. Yeah.
Like, pump the brake. Like, I feel like I'm like cheating on Champ right now. Like, give me like 14 years. I'm not just like, he's not like replaceable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, so eventually we will, you know, we got my wife and I have an almost 2-year-old daughter. We have another one due in a couple months. Like, bringing a puppy into the mix is just going to add a whole new level of stress to the mix. So eventually we will. But for now, it's, you know, we got a lot of good memories of Champ, and this project, iPuppy, is just kind of a way to keep Champ's memory alive, you know, his spirit going. Like, the logo is the chocolate lab for a reason. So, you know, just kind of a way to just always have some sort of a connection to him.
Were you a dog person? Like, when you were a kid, did you have dogs in your house? Or
I was, yeah. We had three total dogs. So kind of interesting. The very first dog we ever had was, I was like 6-7 years old. I remember this day vividly. We had a yellow lab. And I couldn't tell you why, but back then I named him Champ. And I don't know if we had this dog for a day, a week, a month, or a year. But all I remember is the day we had to give him away. I don't know if he was too much on the family or it wasn't the right time to have a dog. But I remember this day when I was like 6 or 7. These two lovely women came by, picked up this yellow lab Champ, and drove off with him. I mean, I still remember bawling my eyes out that day. Yeah. And I told myself, whenever I get my own place, I'm going to get a lab and I'm going to name him Champ. Almost 20 years later, like full circle, you know, I got a lab and I named him Champ. So we had that dog very briefly We had a German Shepherd, I think, briefly as well. We had a family dog, a Beagle. We had a Beagle for, I think, like 10 or 12 years. So yeah, I always grew up with dogs. I love dogs. I just kind of judge people that don't love dogs. I mean, you know, they're always happy to see you, you know?
You're giving me a specific look as you're saying that. I just always judge people. Yeah. You don't own dogs, Jonathan, just so you know. Anyway.
I don't judge people that don't own dogs. I judge people that don't like dogs. I just don't like they're... Almost all of them are just super friendly. Just want to be your best friend, you know? So, So I've had a huge love of dogs ever since I was a child.
Okay. Well, let's dovetail that into iPuppy. What is iPuppy? Why did you start it? Tell me about the product.
Yeah. So iPuppy itself. So I have it here in the background. So iPuppy itself, this is the product. So if you look at it from the side, a little bit at a downslope angle on purpose, it's a paw-shaped button. Obviously, we just thought that was like an easy choice to make. So essentially what it is this is the modern day version of people who would hang bells by the door. You know, some people would hang bells by the door. Dogs would go over, hit the bells, and you would hear the bells and alert you that the dog needs to go out. Those are just obnoxiously loud. They're not appealing or appeasing, I should say, in the household. Like they're kind of like the old school version. And this is the modern day 21st century version of it. So essentially the way it works is the dog presses the button. And so we have put together a very detailed training manual by a certified canine dog trainer and dog psychologist, Brian Gagey. He's been a dog trainer for over 30 years of canine, military, police dogs, stuff like that. So very detailed training manual to set you up to make sure your dog presses the button when they need to go out successfully. Because that's obviously going to be the biggest thing you're going to need to do to make sure it works in the way that it was designed to work. There's a lot of other ways you can use this if you wanted to, but the dog will push the button and it's connected to your Wi-Fi. And when the dog pushes the button, you get a push notification sent to your phone, much like you receive a text message. So it's like you're literally receiving a text message from your dog, which is pretty cool. And when you open up the app, if you have an iPhone, picture like a FaceTime, that's exactly what it looks like. You can decline it, you can answer it, and there's just a big picture in the middle. You hit answer and like your dog's face, so this camera, so this sits on the floor, but the camera's at like a 45 degree angle. So it's angled up a little bit. The dog's right in front of the iPuppy. When you open the camera, like your dog's just going to be like staring at you like in the face. So it's like you're FaceTiming with your dog, which is pretty cool. And it's also got a two-way speaker on the side. If you wanted to, you can talk in through the phone. You hold down the microphone on the phone. You can talk into it and you can talk to your dog if you wanted to. It's a 24/7 live video feed. So even if you don't have any notifications set up, you just want to check in on your dog. Then you can just log in through the app and see what's going on in the purview of the camera. It's almost a 180 degree wide angle camera. Like it's a very wide screen, wide angle camera. So you can view a lot of what's going on, and there's a motion sensor set up in here too. So you don't even need to get the button to be pushed. If the dog's walking around, you know, if you wanted to, you can set the sensitivity to either super high, like super sensitive or not so sensitive, where anytime a motion goes by, a notification is going to go off on your phone. So it's funny, like I'll have it down here in my office and I'll have it set up over the side and I just like get up and walk around and I get a notification sent to my phone. It's just like, you know, motion alert from Champ. And it's like, you know, it's pretty cool. It's communicating with your dog. So it's pretty sweet. We're really excited about it. I think where this would have been super helpful with Champ was, you know, as he got older, I worked downstairs in the basement in the office. His back legs became super weak, right? So it was very difficult for him to go up and down the stairs. So the last year, I literally carried him up and down the stairs. Like that's just like he loved hanging out on this couch behind me. Like any client meetings that I would have, you know, he's like sleeping, chasing rabbits. The legs are kicking in the background. Like he was a staple in the back of all of my meetings. So I know it's nice just having him down here with me. You know, like my wife would be in the city and I just don't want to leave him upstairs, you know, by himself. It's just, you know, you just feel bad. So if he was, like, I could check in on him at any point in time. But also, like, his back legs, when they became really weak, sometimes when you would lie down, if the legs were, like, stretched out underneath him, he had no leverage to, like, push himself up. So there'd be times where he's legit just, like, stuck there. Like, he's not hurting, he's not screaming, but he couldn't get up. He was just stuck. So like, it'd be nice to, when he did stop coming down here with me, it would be nice if I could just check in on him just to make sure he's not like stuck for like hours at a time in that position. If you have a dog, like if you see that, you just feel bad because there's no, like they can't communicate with you in so many ways, you know? So it would have been nice in that regard. Also, like if he was up there, it would have been nice to, if I didn't always know when he needed to go to the bathroom, don't have to get into details. Like, he couldn't always tell me in time as he got older. It's in a very unfortunate situation. Nobody enjoys it. The dog, you, like, nobody enjoys it. So it would have been nice if, you know, he could have just pressed the button when he did need to go out and I could just run upstairs and let him out in time. Because of that, there was a lot of reasons as to why iPuppy just kind of hit home with me. So kind of where it came to be, it was through Boston's Best, actually. Episode 85, I'll give him the shout out, 52 launch. Peter and Dan, the owners, really cool company. I think their tagline is from napkin to reality. So they help you, you come to them with ideas, and if it's possible, they help you bring that idea to life, you know, bring it to retail. And we were chatting after about ideas, and this idea came up, you know, just, it's a dog product, and it's just Champ, like the timing of everything. I was like, I got to move forward with this. I got to work with you guys on this project. So that's kind of like how it snowballed from concept to reality. Now, like, it's been a while. It's been a long time in the process. The manufacturing process is not fun. It's a pain in a lot of ways. It just kind of is what it is. You just have to accept that's what it is. But we're very close to like mass production. We're waiting on the final sample to come in from the manufacturer. This one is like 95% there. There was a couple tweaks that we wanted to make. Like the color of the paw pad was a little different than we wanted. The logo was a little off. So they just got to make a couple of tweaks, and we're waiting for the final one to come over. And then theoretically, that's going to be good to go. And if it is, like, we give the green light for mass production, and yeah, we bring them over here and start selling them. So we're pretty excited. So that's kind of like the story of how iPuppy came to be, and where I think it fits in a lot of households with people with dogs.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, some people, I think they have a dog who's 1 year old, and it's like, I don't need a text. Like, my dog is screaming at me when it has to go to the bathroom. Like, he's, you know, barking and yapping at me. Yeah. But I was talking to a friend of mine who he's had a dog for a long time, and his dog is really sick right now. And he's like, that would actually be great because my dog, like, can't come running down and scream when it has to go to the bathroom. And so to have something, like you said, that can just, like, remote notify that the dog doesn't really have to move and that they're familiar with, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, we're stoked about it. I think it's awesome. Anybody that has a dog, like, you just like, yeah, like, I need this. Like, this is such a cool product. Like, I need this. So it's cool to hear that, you know, yeah, your friend even said that they would love something like that.
So yeah, so when you told me this idea, I was like, that's a really good idea. It also feels like it would exist. Like, I'm kind of surprised that this isn't out there. Did you, like, I don't know, did you do research? Did you find other companies that were doing something similar? What was kind of your process of, okay, I have this idea, but is it actually viable as a business, or is this actually already a very crowded market?
Yeah. So two things. Viable as a business, that's TBD. You know, we're still waiting to sell. We're accepting pre-orders and accepting reservations, but still waiting to sell the first completed mass production units. Yeah. So I was surprised too. So I did a lot of research into it, and there's a couple of things out there. So the most common one out there is called the Furbo. So the Furbo is essentially, it's a dog security. It's like a Ring camera for dogs, right? So like it's got the 24/7 live video feed as well. It's a little taller. That was the very first version that came out. And then they even have a little hole in there where you can fill it with treats. And like, remotely, you can push a button on your phone and you can send a treat out, spit a treat out to your dog. Like, it's a really cool product. My sister had one with her dog. She was like, but it got to a point where, like, he would literally just, like, stare in front of, like, the phone, waiting for me to spit treats out to him. Like, like, it was a way where I could, like look at him all day. So that was nice. But there's that. They don't have the button feature, more a training feature like ours is. Theirs is just more of a security camera with that extra feature of the dog. It's a really cool product. And then there are other ones where you train the dog to push a button and it makes a noise. This one makes a noise as well, but there's nothing that's out there that connects to your Wi-Fi and remotely and sends you a push notification. We're very surprised. There's nothing out there. So this is kind of a combination of the two of those into one. I was surprised. We went, you know, we did a patent search with our attorneys and everything checked out. And now, you know, we filed our non-provisional patent and waiting on that. Yeah, we were very surprised. I thought it was a really cool idea, but I was like, there's no way, especially in the pet industry. I was like, there's no way this is not out there yet. As it turns out, it wasn't. So we quickly filed what's called a provisional patent. And that was just a way to, it's kind of like a temporary patent application while we go through the process of figuring out the designs and making sure structurally nothing is really going to change. So we did that as we finalized the molding and the internal hardware of it to make sure nothing was really going to change. And once we knew for sure nothing was going to change, we filed for the non-provisional. But what the provisional did is essentially patents, it's a whole thing that I've learned a lot about over the last year. It's first to file. So, you know, I would watch Shark Tank, like, why do these people say patent pending? But like, they're on national commercial, like national television, like these people are going to rip them off. But what it means is you're first to file. So like, you're good. And you're just kind of waiting for your actual stamp of approval. But once you're first to file, you know, you're the first person in there. You know, people can't just like rip you off and file for the same exact thing. You're the first to file. So the provisional kind of give us like a temporary first to file, because our actual application dates back to the provisional application. Went through that whole process. That was a really big learning curve of that whole world. But yeah, long-winded answer. I was very surprised that nothing was out there like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel so. I run a company and we sell a service, right? Like, so if somebody, we do events, so somebody wants to book us for an event. So, like, the first day I started the company, I was able to just say to people, like, this is the service. And if somebody hired me, I was able to provide that service. And it feels like to build a product is just such a different beast, because it's like, you're not just, oh, you paid me, I'm going to do a thing. It's like, I have to buy 1,000 units and like build them and ship them and store them and then hope I can sell X number to break even. So now you said like it's been a kind of a nightmare doing the manufacturing. So I'm sorry to ask you to relive a nightmare. But what is it like to say, okay, in my brain, I have an idea what this is going to be, to now we're getting X number of units come into our door so that people can actually physically buy them or they can sell them in stores or whatever?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we initially had all these sketches and what we thought would be the most, the most appealing and coolest design. Like, there were like three concepts that we were kind of working on. Ultimately, this is what we settled with for a number of reasons. But then, like, on top of that, you talk to the manufacturers and you need to make sure DFM, so design for manufacturability or design for manufacturer, whatever it stands for, that's a whole different animal. You need to have a product that's actually designed in a way where it can be manufactured for mass production. Went back and forth with manufacturers and the engineers a lot, designing of what's capable, even from down to how we have the logo above the paw. I mean, I just, like, it blew my mind how many options there were. And then that we drilled down to, it's like, oh no, like, we can't really do this. This would be like an extra $250 per unit. I was like, well, that's kind of crazy. Like, that's like, there's no real benefit to having this for an extra $2.50 a unit. So a lot of that stuff. So you finalize the process of the design of the product, both the external and then the internal hardware for it. And then you have to get what's called tooling. So you have a tool that's built that is designed to pump out tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of your unit, you know, per lifetime. And so then you had to pay. So not only are we paying to get the unit built, we're paying for the tooling to then build the units. Uh-huh. And then we're paying for the samples to come over to review them. And it's very frustrating when they're not perfect, because you know you just got to buy more samples on the next, you know, Gen 2 or Gen 3. And then from there, yeah, we have thousands of dollars of our MOQ, which means minimum order quantity. I'm sorry, thousands of units that we need to order, you know, and that's, you know, they don't just do that for free. So we got to front load that and then obviously hope to sell it on the back end. I mean, and the units are an asset, right? I mean, they're an asset as long as you can sell them, right? You know, inventory is an asset. So the goal is to, sell out of the first mass production order that we need to fulfill. And that'll just give us a little bit less weight on our shoulders. Like, okay, this is like a viable product. You know, we have something that's in demand that people enjoy. And then after you sell through that, it's, you know, the testimonials, the reviews, getting really solid customer feedback on what they like, you know, before ordering the next set of inventory. Because theoretically, you know, the more you buy, the less per unit it is, but obviously that's still gonna be a higher out of pocket cost. So it's like a revolving door of what you need to do with the inventory. It's a very delicate process. And right now, you know, we're itching to get this out. I wanted to get this out in the spring. But at the end of the day, the product wasn't ready, you know? So it's just like, even though, you know, my wife and I have invested money into it, it's not the right time. Like, you can't just like put a product out there if it's not perfect. Right. So you just kind of have to go through the process, but it's, we're there, we're close. I'd say we're on like the 2-yard line. It feels like the longest 2 yards, before we're actually there. But I have a good feeling we're close. Cause then after that, we can give the green light, and then the app's like, functionality wise, the app is 100% done. Aesthetic wise, I want it to look like prettier, if you will. Yeah. But that's kind of like more of an easy fix. Like the functionality works. Now it's just really making it like look more appealing and, you know, the user experience wise, it looks good. So yeah, it turned in from what I thought. I was just like, oh, it's going to have this product, like I'll have this made in a few months and I'll just start selling it on the side. And this has quickly turned into, I mean, this is a business. There's, you know, everything from patents and the legal attorneys, and then the privacy language and the liability insurance of all, like, there's just, it's turned into a full-fledged business. I severely underestimated it, but I actually think that's a good thing. Because I think if I knew work it was going to be, I may not have had the guts to like go down the path of it. But we're this close and it's exciting. You know, hopefully we get a good sample soon and we can give the green light.
Yeah, I think that's something with all entrepreneurs. It's just like, oh, I'll just do this. I'll just do a little of this. And then this will happen. And then the money will, I'll put in some work up front. And then the money will just kind of come rolling in. And
super easy.
You know, kind of send it, forget it. And like you said, like, it's a good thing because that's what makes you actually do it. And then, you know, you don't realize how hard it's going to be. But then hopefully, ultimately, it's worth it.
Yeah, because like when you like go through the process, like, okay, I got to do this next. But to do this, there's like four steps before to get done. I'm like, okay. So like you're constantly taking like one step forward, four steps back. And then you get to that step. Like along the way, you've realized, or other conversations, you've been told like, oh, this needs to be happen next. It's like, okay. So there's another four steps here. And that's just like, it's just, I mean, it's just the never ending step of things to do. But, you know, and then like this is all the pre-production stage. Like afterward, like it's fun. But I feel like once we start selling it and have a real final product, which will hopefully be within the next couple of months, next year will be a lot of fun. Go to trade shows, show people how it works. You know, we already signed up for a couple of pet expos. Never thought 18 months ago I'd be signing up for pet expos like Super Pet. There's Super Pet, there's Super Zoo, there's Global Pet. Like sign up for all these trade shows next year. So it's just, that'll be a lot of exciting stuff next year.
Yeah. So I want to go back because there's a very important question. What is the minimum number of units you have to order of this product?
Right now it's 5,000.
So you're going to have 5,000 iPuppies coming to your house.
5,000 iPuppies. Yeah. So we did just finalize working with a fulfillment center. So initially, yes, they were going to be over here to my right in the basement. And I was pleasantly surprised speaking with some fulfillment centers about overall cost is a lot less than I expected it to be for certain amount per unit that goes out the door versus having everything here. They package everything, they put in the inserts, they ship everything out. It's worth it. But 5,000 is the MOQ that we have to order. So if yourself and 4,999 other people listening would want to purchase an iPuppy, that would go to great lengths where we can purchase the second mass production order pretty quickly.
Okay. You already have a business, right? You are a financial planner, which is its own form of running a company. And especially when you're like your own entity, obviously you have your chip business that we've heard about in episode 100. So it's kind of like anything you do at your current job or your current role is the more time you put in, the more money you're going to make. And when you're starting a business, it's like, I'm going to invest a bunch of time. And then hopefully the more time I put in, the more money I make. But so that means anytime you're putting into the new company, that's not time you're putting into your old job. And so like, how do you do the calculus of like, you know what, it actually makes sense to take X number of hours a week out of the time that I was spending or would have potentially spent on this to do this other venture versus like what you were already doing?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a hard balance. I think going back to like the chip business that I owned, I mean, that one really came down to, I just didn't want to do that for another 30 years. And I got to a point where I had a big enough of an area that I covered where I sold off half of it. And the other half provided me with really just enough to get by, like just enough as I entered in the financial planning space, which is a $0 salary. I like to take on $0 salary jobs. So, you know, and then that takes time is really just building up a book of business. You know, you're not going to make a ton of money up front. It takes years to really build up a book of business where one, you have recurring revenue, but two, you know, people get married and they need some insurance, you know, they have children, they want to set up accounts for them, and they leave jobs and they have 401ks to roll over and consolidate. So it really just takes up a lot of time to build up a book of business, whereas something always just comes up from an existing client. And then that's gotten to a point where I'm not saying I'm comfortable by any means, but it's gotten to a point where like I still do that. That's 40, probably 45 hours a week. And then iPuppy is probably another 25 to 30 hours a week. Early in the mornings, I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm working usually like 3:30 to like 6:30 on this. Then my daughter wakes up, and then it's like dad mode for the next 2 hours. and then it's full-time job, and then daughter goes to bed, and then it's this for a few more hours. Like last night, I was up till 11:30, working on the Kickstarter page for iPuppy, and I was up at 3 o'clock. Like I got like, I'm on like a little over 3 hours of sleep right now. Like it's just, it kind of is what it is. Like it's just like there's certain things you got to do to get to a certain point. I am lucky enough where like in the financial planning space, I can set up my calendar however I want, right? So like okay. I do front load it on certain days and certain times of each day that I just want. Like if I have four meetings in a day, instead of having one at 9 and another one at 11 and really just giving like an hour in between, like I'll have four of them from 8 to 12 and then just have all afternoon to try to focus on dedicated time on something else right now, you know, iPuppy. So it's hard. It's a certain, certainly a hard thing to balance. I don't know if I've answered the question, I guess, but like, it's just a hard thing to balance. Like I've gotten to a point where I can kind of dictate my calendar a lot more than I would have been able to even just 2 years ago in the financial planning space. That's allowed me to do it, to focus as much time as I need to for on iPuppy just to get it off the ground. Like I started using Calendly, which I never did before, but now I just block off certain parts of my calendar. And it's like people just, these are your options to book.
Yeah.
So like they just book it. And it's like, oh, well, that's fantastic.
That software is great. It's like you feel like kind of a jerk the first time. You're like, here's a link. You tell, you know, click a button to choose when we're going to meet, but it's like, oh, this is better for them. And it's so much easier to just be like, these are the times I'm free. I don't have to like worry that they're going to propose times I don't like. We go back and forth.
Yeah. Like I did. I felt like a jerk is a good way to phrase it. I really didn't start using it until probably like 6 months ago. And I felt kind of bad about it. Like I blocked off every single Friday, like Friday going into the summertime, but two, like Fridays turned into just iPuppy Friday. Like that was just kind of the days where I could spend a lot of time on iPuppy, and I would just have, you know, anywhere from 12 to 16 meetings Monday through Thursday. Exactly what I was doing beforehand. It's just a lot more compressed. You got to be on your game with that as far as follow-ups go. You got to get your follow-up and like to-do list and action items out the door immediately. Because once you drag on them, they just build up on you. And it, like that takes, that'll take up half a Friday as it is. So it's taken some time, but I've kind of got like a pretty good system down right now. That's kind of, that answers, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of like what, how I've gone about it so far is just trying to the balance act of everything.
Yeah. And you're also, is your wife working with you on this company as well?
She is. Yep. She works, she's very good. So I have like big picture ideas and like, I'll write a bunch of stuff up and like, she's very good at, she'll come in and she'll wordsmith a lot of like marketing pieces or emails. And she also happens to work at an engineering company, in charge of business development for the East Coast of this company. So she actually has some insight there that wasn't planned. Like, that's not why we got into it, but it's been like pretty valuable insight as to, you know, designing for manufacturability and talking with some of the engineers about their thoughts on, and some of their contacts, quite frankly, that we've been able to reach out to. And so she's helped me with the design aspect and a lot of I'll do a lot of the upfront work, and then she'll come in and just tweak and make everything perfect. I just kind of like take a bunch of words and images and throw them onto like a whiteboard. And she just kind of like, she can like design things a lot better and write things a lot better than I can. So it's been fun because candidly with a child, we don't really have a lot of time to really just spend with each other anymore. Like it's an hour and a half in the morning, but we're really just getting the daughter ready for school and, you know, getting ready to go to work. And then at night it's, you know, picking her up from daycare, feeding her, putting her to bed. And then it's like, by that point, it's after 8 o'clock where we'd have like an hour where we'd like chill on the couch or something like that. Now it's like iPuppy stuff for an hour. Like she was down here last night with me for like 3 hours working. So it's been fun. It's been like, it's another avenue that, you know, just, it's just more of a way for us to like become closer as we work on something like this. It's like a whole adventure that we're working on together. We're just kind of trying to figure out. So it's been a pretty cool concept to work with her on it.
Yeah. I think people always talk about like do or don't go into business with your friends or with your partner. And, you know, it's often framed of like, obviously if things go wrong, that could be especially problematic, but also like, you know, you're working with someone that you trust or who you know is great at what they do. But there is also this element of like, it's kind of this like cheat code in life that a way to spend more time with the people you love is to work with them. You know, it's like, well, if I work with my wife or my really good friend or something, like, I actually get to see them 10 hours a day instead of 1 hour a day or whatever. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's been a really huge component that, you know, didn't really think through when we started this whole project. It's obviously happened, and it's been nice that it's happened like that because we It's just something else to bond over. You know, like she's really like, I'm more of like the, let's just, we got to do this, like quick decision. She's like, no, we got to think this through. And like, yeah. she's the more logical one from that perspective. And now like, once we start, I still remember her the very first time we got like the very first 3D printed sample at 52 launch. She was like, this is pretty cool. She's like, now I can say, like, I can see it now. Like I started early on. And like, she's like, this is cool. And now and then like, you could see like the gears turning in her head and like how excited she got as we like, as it became more real. And so it's been a nice little thing for us to bond over the last, you know, year or so.
All right, Mark, I've got three key questions here.
Okay.
Like I said, you've run multiple businesses in the past. And so I'm curious what has happened in the process of iPuppy where you've said to yourself like, oh, I'm going to do X differently or explicitly because I've learned this lesson already when I've run a business before. Like, what is a lesson that you've learned for the first two businesses that you've really taken with you into running iPuppy?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is organization. So you can imagine running a chip business. Uh-huh. Really got like a lot of organization on the back end. Like I never used my email. Like now, like, I don't know, 100 emails a day in and out. Like I can't even fathom like not like, like I had nothing organized and I went into finance and like, I was the person, like I'm very OCD where I delete everything. Like I'm the person with zero for the notifications. You know, the people that got 20,000 email notifications, like just pinged at that corner of that icon gives me anxiety just thinking about it. So like I remember when I started, I get an email, you know, it's about whether it's somebody opened up an investor account, for example. Right. And I would just like, okay, like I responded to the email and I just deleted it. And a colleague of mine was like, what are you doing? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, what if you have to get back to that? She's like, I was like, why would I need to get back to that? She's like, Mark, like you need to have like just record of everything. Like you don't need to save the emails in a file, but just like open them, make sure they're read. If that makes you like, you know, your OCD, but like, you can't just like, you're gonna need to refer back to these emails at some point in time for a lot of things. I was like, okay. And I did. And like, so now like I had no organizational skills from that perspective. Like I'm a very OCD, like structured person, as you know, but like I had no organization. Now I save everything. If you go into, so the LLC is named Pet Tech. So if you went into my files under Pet Tech, there's iPuppy folder. Cause like, ideally I want to have like 3 to 5 products under Pet Tech. So there's the iPuppy folder. And then there's probably 50 other folders in there, everything from the logo manufacturing to the app creation to the design to the concepts, the legal side of things to the Kickstarter page to the launch priority to like, you name it. I have folders for everything. And now I feel like I've gone too far on the other side where I have way too many folders that I save everything in like their own little folder that sometimes it takes me longer than it should take to find it because I'm like, oh, I created a folder for this one thing one day. But I think to answer your question, the organizational side of things is something I learned it was a big component of what I learned for the finance thing to go into starting another business for iPuppy. You got to save everything. So you can have, whether it's for a good reason or a bad reason, like you want to have track record of everything you've talked about to refer back to, you know, for future emails and stuff like that. So I would say the organizational piece.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're like
email right now, don't you?
You said I have 1,000 unread emails right now, don't I?
Are you one of those people?
Mark, I feel like you just have this image of me in your head that, frankly, I don't feel like I come off very great. It's like, John, he's this kind of disorganized guy. He's just sleeping in, playing tennis in the morning, getting up to whatever, not checking his email. I also go through my entire inbox every day. Everything I do, I either respond to it and archive it, or if it creates a to-do, I put that in a separate to-do list. I have a spreadsheet to-do list system. And it goes into its place in the spreadsheet system, and then I archive it. So each thing is getting gotten rid of. Usually at the end of the day, I've got like 4 emails in my inbox. So
I feel like I saw like a little like smirk or reaction on your face when I had said that. So I kind of got the impression, I obviously misread that reaction, but I thought you were one of those people.
I won't name any names, but I have people in my life who, yes, are those people. And anytime the notifications have a comma in them, I think that's where it's kind of like one. Yep. 327, like 1,000. That's when we've gone a bridge too far.
I agree.
You've been a podcast host. You've talked to 99 other business owners. Obviously, 52 Launch helped you launch this company. But what else? What's something that you learned from talking to all those different entrepreneurs that you've applied in running this company?
Yeah, a lot. Because ironically enough, so a handful of them I can think of off the top of my head ran Kickstarter campaigns. So like that's one thing where I was like, okay, well, to help with pre-orders and people reserving iPuppies, like it would probably be nice to run a Kickstarter campaign to see if, you know, any of these pre-orders help go directly towards the inventory and just kind of check out the demand. And I had Slate Milk, Manny Lubin, they had a Kickstarter campaign. They've crushed it. They just signed literally like a deal with UFC. Like IQ Bar, Will Nitza, he ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign. True, Jack McNamara, like he ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign. Like as I was talking to them on the podcast, they were talking about the Kickstarter campaigns. And I'd reached out to those three guys and a couple others that have run them and just kind of pick their brain of like, what are best practices for this? And then on top of that, how did you guys market just in general? Because like, you know, my wife and I are funding this out of our back pockets, right? So like we've strategically done it in a couple of different ways, but like, it's like, we don't got like venture capitalists backing us. I mean, I don't have millions of dollars in my back pockets. So, like it's a very strategic way of how do you market this and get the best ROI on every dollar that you spend versus organic growth? Like, what's the balance with that? Like, what do you promote? What do you spend money towards? Because every time I spend money on something like the launch party or the Kickstarter ads, it's like, this better come back because this is just like money out of pocket right now, you know? So they've been, those few guys in particular have been very helpful from the marketing piece because they're both very, like Slate and IQ Bar are both very successful companies. Like they've killed it. And Slate was on Shark Tank. My goal was to be on Shark Tank next year in 2024. So like I've talked to him about that. I have a couple other people, Julia Rogers of Hello Prenup. She was on Shark Tank. So I've talked to her about that. So like, it's been really cool. Like I had no idea when I started a podcast just to help promote local business owners that it's kind of come full circle in so many ways where because of the podcast, I've started Pet Tech with iPuppy. And I have these other contacts and business owners throughout Massachusetts that have kind of done everything that I'm trying to do as well. So it's been really cool. Like I constantly go back through the podcast guests list and say, okay, like this person talked about this. Like, I've re-listened to a lot of the episodes. As much as I hate listening to myself, like host episodes, the first one I ever did was super cringeworthy. The first like minute, it was like awful. But like, it's been helpful to go back and again, saving all these files. Like I have all of these recordings still in my files. And that's been really helpful in a lot of different ways as we're navigating iPub, because like there's a different state, every stage I'm at, there's something that I need to figure out. And I'm like, okay, who in my podcast has done this? And who can I reach out to see if they're, you know, and everybody that's gone through it, like any business owner, like they want to help other business owners if it's, you know, for the most part. So everybody's like pretty helpful and wants to give back because they've been there. So it's like, they'll offer 15, 30 minutes of their time just to kind of talk through it, which has been super cool.
Yeah, it's funny. People are always talking about like business owners and competition. And it's like every business owner I talk to is like, finally, someone asking me to like, you know, I've spent like the last 10 years only thinking about this one thing. Like finally, I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Like I reached out to Manny. He's like, yeah, man, like give me a shout. Like give me a call, give me a call tonight. Happy to chat through. And like, you know, this dude just struck a deal like with a very big company. And he's like, still gave me like 20 minutes to like talk through, and he didn't look at it as giving me his time. Like he's just like, yeah, like happy to hop on the phone. It's like, it was cool, man. Like it's just, yeah, it's really cool. Like all business owners, like they just want to help you, especially if you're not even in a competing industry. Like, you know, like of course they're going to try to help you. Like pets, dogs, and like chocolate protein milk. Like, you know, I'm not a threat to him. He's just trying, you know, he just wants to offer me any advice he can. It's been super cool.
There's a market there, protein milk for dogs. Mark, you're a dad. And you're having a second kid on the way. What has being a father or a husband taught you about business or that you've applied to this company?
Oh boy, I can go down forever about this. Being a dad is the coolest thing. Like it's the most difficult and most rewarding thing I've ever done. Our daughter's awesome. We don't know if we're having a boy or girl for the second one, but you know, one thing I've really learned in general about, you know, I can be stressed out about finance gig, stress out about iPuppy, trying to get things on time. And it's like, I have like, I could picture like another 12 hours of work I could probably do today. And then like, it's like, I know I got to go upstairs and, you know, put my daughter to bed, like have dinner, hang out with her. And it's like, everything goes away when you're hanging out with your kid. Like nothing matters. Like this morning, for example, perfect example, we woke her up. She's chilling in our bed watching Sesame Street. The girl loves Elmo. And I'm like, I got to shower. Like, I got to do this. Like before she goes to daycare, I'm like, this is like kind of like an in-between time where I can get this done while nobody's doing anything. And, you know, when she goes to daycare, like I can start my day. And like, I'm about to get out of the bed and she just looks up at me and she like crawls over and like hops up on my lap. And it's like, okay, this is what I'm doing for the next half an hour. And like, it, like my shower can wait, like whatever, like 15 minutes of other work that I wanted to do can wait. Like that moment right there is like the coolest thing. So as far as like what I've learned is like, as important as you think some of the business aspects are, like at the end of the day, like her and my wife are like the most important pieces to the day. And like nothing else matters. You know, you come home and you pick her up at daycare. She walks in the door and she runs over to you and gives you like a big hug with a smile on her, like, da-da. Like, dude, like nothing else matters. Like you could have the most stressful day. So it's kind of brought me down to, you know, prioritize, like priorities, like what's the most important thing. And that's always, she's always going to be number one. And, you know, our little family that we're, you know, that we're creating is going to be top priority. And then the businesses, they'll play out on their own in their own time. You know, I think to answer your question, it's just, that's kind of what's taught me. Cause I never really had that perspective until almost 2 years ago now. It's just nothing else matters. Like, you know, like you want to throw $500 in your Roth IRA, I would like email you immediately. Like, let's get, like, I'll take care of this for you ASAP. It's like, you can wait. Like, you can wait a day. Like, I, you know, like my daughter's homesick, I'll email you tomorrow. Like, it's not going to have any effect on either of our lives over the next 24 hours. You know, so it's just, that's something I've learned a lot ever since becoming a dad.
Very cool. All right. Well, I think that's a nice note to wrap up on. We got to ask you one final question. People want to buy iPuppy. Where do they go? What do they do? How do they do it?
Yes. Great question. So right now, everything, our current reservation page is presale.ipuppy.com. That's presale.ipuppe.com. And then once by the time we run this episode, we'll post the actual Kickstarter link. If you want to reserve it directly through the Kickstarter, I submitted it for approval like 2 days ago. So I should be getting approval today or tomorrow. We'll provide that link at the end of this. That'll have some customized kickstarter.com/iPuppy link, probably something like that. So I'll provide that at the end, but that's where we're going to be. The Kickstarter is going to be live October 4th, and that's going to kick off. We're also going to have a launch party to tie into day number one of the Kickstarter campaign. And there's no better place right now for a dog product launch party to have it at the new Park 9 Dog Bar in Everett. It's legit a 10,000 square foot facility designed for you to bring your dog and like have a beer or have a drink. It's a really cool spot. We're stoked about it. That's going to be 6 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, October 4th. Feel free to come on by if you have a dog, even better. Dogs aren't required, but we have a red carpet and a banner, like backdrop. Dogs are literally going to like strut their stuff down a red carpet and have their photos taken. So it'll be a cool event. We're going to have prizes, giveaways. So you should come on by.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, thanks, Mark. Best of luck with the launch of the new product, and we're excited to see it.
Appreciate it, Jonathan. Thanks. Thanks for doing this. This is a great time.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @bostonsbest_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/bostonsbestpodcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.